Hello, and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's June 12th, 2016. It was on this day in 1990, Russia Day, that the Parliament of the Russian Federation formally declared its sovereignty. Exactly 1 year later, on June 12, 1991, Russians elected Boris Yeltsin President of the Republic. Now, here's what's ahead on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about a student from Germany who studied at the University of Florida. It wasn't easy for her, but like with the student from South Africa we heard about last week, she finally adjusted to her new life. Then Anna Mateo will be with us, as she is every Sunday, with Words and Their Stories. This week, she will tell us some of the many interesting American English idioms using the word book. And as we always do on the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we will tell you about some of the many changes in the social customs and day-to-day life of millions of Americans during the presidency of Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Sunday, we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. Now, as we do every Sunday, we tell you what is happening in American higher education. Last week, correspondent Pete Musto told us about a student from South Africa who had trouble adjusting to life in a small college town in the southeastern state of Florida. Now, Pete tells us about a student from Germany who had the same problem.
Paula Rotscher is from Buchstedt, Germany. She came to Gainesville as an undergraduate student in 2012. Rotscher struggled at first to adjust to a new culture. She says American students share their feelings and opinions with strangers much more than Germans do. She also says she had to learn to be more open-minded. Rotscher also had to adjust to a foreign language. She says she was only somewhat prepared to study at the college level at an English-speaking university. In high school, Rotscher studied at an international baccalaureate or IB program. IB is an international organization that teaches international issues in different and more challenging ways than a traditional education does. IB began in 1968 and reported having more than 5,500 programs around the world in February 2016. IB programs for high school students help prepare them for college. Students can also use IB classes as credit towards their degree. Rocha says she completed her IB program with strong English skills, but those skills were not good enough when she first arrived at the University of Florida. She says that doing everything in English is difficult, even for students who are well prepared.
One expectation, I think, is that if you're good at writing and reading English back home in school, you think you'll do well here too, but then, of course, you have to speak English, and that's a big challenge for a lot of international students.
Rocha now speaks English like a native speaker. Her main challenge these days is the hot, humid weather in Florida.
Germany has four distinct seasons. Florida does not have four distinct seasons.
Her early difficulties did not stop Rocha from taking full advantage of the academic opportunities at the University of Florida. Rocha chose to seek two undergraduate degrees, one in sustainability studies and another in geography. She also chose to seek a minor degree in the Arabic language. She has been studying Arabic since she was 11 years old. Rocha says university students in Germany usually complete an undergraduate degree in fewer than 4 years. She also had some extra credits from her high school IB program. Therefore, she felt she could do more with the time she had. Rocha is also taking advantage of opportunities outside the classroom. She has a special interest in refugees. In 2015, she joined the Interfaith Alliance for Immigrant Justice. The group is a collection of different religious organizations who fight for immigrant rights. Rocha and the organization work with the city government to make Gainesville an official Welcoming America city. Welcoming America is an organization of U.S. cities that agree to provide resources for immigrant communities. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, if it's Sunday, it's time for Ana Mateo and Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. For the past 2 weeks, she has told us about the many uses of the word book. This week, she tells us some American English idioms using that word.
Let's say the booked bookie goes to trial. He hopes for a light punishment, but instead the judge throws the book at him. The judge gives him the most serious punishment possible. However, the judge must still do things by the book. She must honor the rules of the legal system. People who go by the book follow the rules. So there are people who are by the book, and then there are people who are open books. If you are an open book, you are easy to know because you share or show your thoughts and emotions easily. American writer Willa Cather used the expression open book in her novel, My Antonia. She describes a Christmas morning in which a poor neighbor visits a family.
We persuaded our guest to stay for supper with us. He needed little urging. As we sat down to the table, it occurred to me that he liked to look at us and that our faces were open books to him. When his deep-seeing eyes rested on me, I felt as if he were looking far ahead into the future for me, down the road I would have to travel.
Ms. Cather wrote many books, but you don't have to write a book for people to say you've written a book. Let me explain. Saying that someone has written the book on something means they know a lot about a subject. They are an expert. For example, a friend of mine in college wrote the book on pulling all-nighters. She was an expert at cramming a semester's worth of work into just a few nights. This same college friend also tried every trick in the book to get out of doing her work. When you try every trick in the book, it means you have tried everything possible to do something or to not do something. She would lie about being sick. She would even lie about attending the funeral of her great aunt's sister's husband. When trying to get out of work, lying about the death of a distant relative is the oldest trick in the book. The oldest trick in the book is a trick that has been used many, many times and remains effective. Now let's hear some of these expressions in a dialogue. What are you doing?
Trying to fix my car. I have tried every trick in the book, but it just won't start.
You should ask Elizabeth from apartment 3B for help.
You mean young, beautiful Elizabeth? Why would I ask her for help fixing my car?
Because she wrote the book on fixing cars. Her grandfather, father, and four brothers are all mechanics. She's been fixing cars since she was 15 years old.
Wow. I guess I shouldn't judge a book by its cover.
No, you shouldn't. Just because Elizabeth is young and beautiful, you thought she could not fix a car. She's also a great DJ. I just booked her for a party I'm planning.
Really? That's cool. You know, I may have prejudged Elizabeth, but I'm sure you have done the same. For example, what do you think about the guy who lives in apartment 4C?
The quiet accountant? He never talks about himself, so I wouldn't call him an open book. But he's really nice and seems trustworthy.
What would you say if I told you he got busted for cooking the books on a big investment scam?
What? Are you serious?
Yes, and it's not the first time he has been booked for this type of crime. So the judge threw the book at him. He'll be in prison for at least 7 years.
Wow, you're right. You really can't judge a book by its cover. Hey, your car started. You don't need Elizabeth after all.
Well, I'm still going to ask her for help. And then ask her out to dinner.
That is the oldest trick in the book. And like your old car, that old trick will most likely backfire. Is your car supposed to smoke like that? And it's time to close this chapter of Words and Their Stories. Join us again next week as we explore the origin and usage of Common American English. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. Now, as we do every Sunday, we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we tell about the many changes in the social customs and day-to-day life of millions of Americans during the administration of President Calvin Coolidge. Many young people began to challenge the traditions of their parents and grandparents. They experimented with new ideas and ways of living. People of all kinds became interested in the new popular culture. Radio and films brought them exciting news of court trials, sports heroes, and wild parties. The 1920s was one of the most active and important periods for the more serious arts. Writers, painters, and other artists produced some of the greatest work in the nation's history. Now, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about American arts during this exciting period.
Most Americans approved strongly of the economic growth and improved living conditions during the 1920s. They supported the conservative Republican policies of President Calvin Coolidge, and they had great faith in the country's business leaders and economic system. However, many of the nation's serious artists had a different and darker view of society. They were troubled deeply by the changes they saw. They believed that Americans had become too interested in money and wealth. These artists rejected the new business society. And they also questioned the value of politics. Many of them believed that the First World War in Europe had been a terrible mistake. These artists had little faith in the political leaders who came to power after the war. They felt a need to protest the way the world was changing around them.
The spirit of protest was especially strong in serious American writing during the 1920s. Many of the greatest writers of this period hated the new business culture. One such writer was Sinclair Lewis. He was the first American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. Lewis wrote about Americans living in the towns and villages in the central part of the United States. Many of the people in his books were foolish men and women with empty values. They chased after money and popularity. In his famous book, Main Street, Lewis joked about and criticized small-town business owners. Social criticism also was central to the writing of the newspaper writer H.L. Mencken from the eastern city of Baltimore. Mencken considered most Americans to be stupid and violent fools. He attacked their values without mercy. Of course, many traditional Americans reacted strongly to such criticism. For example, some religious and business leaders attacked Mencken as a dangerous person whose words were treason against the United States. But many young people thought Mencken was a hero whose only crime was writing the truth.
The work of Lewis, Mencken, and a number of other writers of the 1920s has been forgotten by many Americans as the years have passed. But the period did produce some truly great writing. One of the greatest writers of these years was Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway wrote about love, war, sports, and other subjects. He used short sentences and rough words. His style was sharper and different from traditional American writing, and his strong views about life set him apart from most other Americans. Another major writer was F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald wrote especially about rich Americans searching for happiness and new values. His books were filled with people who rejected traditional beliefs. His book, The Great Gatsby, is considered today to be one of the greatest works in the history of American writing. A third great writer of the 1920s was William Faulkner. Faulkner wrote about the special problems and ways of life in the American South. His books explored the emotional tension in a society still suffering from the loss of the Civil War 60 years before. Some of Faulkner's best books were The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, and Absalom, Absalom. Like Hemingway, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
The 1920s also produced the greatest writer of theater plays in American history, Eugene O'Neill. O'Neill was an Irish-American with a dark and violent view of human nature. His plays used new theatrical methods and ways of presenting ideas, but they carried an emotional power never before seen in the American theater. Some of his best-known plays were Morning Becomes Electra, The Iceman Cometh, and A Long Day's Journey into Night. A number of American writers also produced great poetry during the 1920s. Probably the most famous work was The Wasteland, a poem of sadness by the writer T.S. Eliot.
There also were important changes in American painting during the 1920s. Economic growth gave many Americans the money to buy art for their homes for the first time. 60 new museums opened. Slowly, Americans learned about serious art. Actually, American art had been changing in important ways since the beginning of the century. In 1908, a group of New York artists arranged a historic show. These artists tried to show real life in their paintings. They painted new kinds of subjects. For example, George Bellows painted many emotional and realistic pictures of the sport of boxing. His work and the painting of other realistic artists became known as the Ashcan School of Art. Another important group of modern artists was led by the great photographer Alfred Stieglitz. This group held a major art show in 1913 in New York, Chicago, and Boston. The show presented modern art from Europe. Americans got their first chance to see the work of such painters as Pablo Picasso and Georges Braque. The show caused a huge public debate in the United States. Traditional art critics accused the organizers of the show of trying to overthrow Christianity and American values. Former President Theodore Roosevelt and others denounced the new art as a threat to the country. However, many young American painters and art lovers did not agree. They became very interested in the new art styles from Europe. They studied them closely. Soon, Charles DeMuth, Joseph Stella, and other American painters began to produce excellent art in the new Cubist style. John Marin painted beautiful views of sea coasts in New York and Maine, and such artists as Max Weber and Georgia O'Keeffe painted in styles that seemed to come more from their own imagination than from reality. As with writing, the work of many of these serious modern painters only became popular many years later.
The greatest American designer of buildings during the 1920s was Frank Lloyd Wright. Wright believed that architects should design a building to fit its location, not to copy some ancient style. He used local materials in new ways. Wright invented many imaginative methods to combine useful building design with natural beauty. But again, most Americans did not know of Wright's work. Instead, they turned to local architects with traditional beliefs. These architects generally designed old and safe styles for buildings, for homes, offices, colleges, and other needs.
Writers and artists now look back at the roaring 1920s as an extremely important period that gave birth to many new styles and ideas. Hemingway's style of writing continues to influence American writers. Many painters say the period marked the real birth of modern American art. And architecture students in the United States and other countries now study the buildings of Frank Lloyd Wright. The changes in American society caused many of these artists much sadness and pain in their personal lives. But their expressions of protest and their rich imagination produced a body of work that has grown in influence with the passing years. But in many, even most ways, the 1920s were a conservative time in American life. Voters elected three conservative Republican presidents, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover. And they supported many conservative social and political policies. Those policies will be the subject of our Making of a Nation program next week on Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul. It was presented by Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe, and we thank them all. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to all of the stories that you have just heard on this program. Next week, in addition to the Making of a Nation, we will tell you what is happening in higher education. And Anna Mateo will be here, as always, with Words and Their Stories. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. Thanks for spending some time with us today. Jonathan Evans will be here tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with As It Is Monday, the weekday Learning English broadcast, webcast, and podcast from the Voice of America.